Hey everyone, and welcome to the O Studio podcast, where we delve into the art of feeling better. My name is Tim Bateman, founder of O Studio, a New Zealand wellness franchise that's here to help you relax, recover, and improve your health and well-being. Today, Soph, Mehdi, and I chat with Jason Gunn. This was genuinely one of my favorite discussions yet. Jason had a massive impact on so many of us growing up, and he has some incredible stories and insights to share. I really hope you enjoy.
Jason Gunn, welcome to the O Studio podcast.
This is really special. Yeah, a lot of love in the room. I love it. It's great.
There is. And we like to always, whenever we have a guest on, we love them to experience O Studio beforehand. You've just come out of a float. First question, how was it?
Well, I mean, there's the Jason who went into the float and there's the Jason that came out. It's like, and I'm not going to lie, actually, my brain has been really, really busy recently. Just there's a lot going on, which I'm sure we'll get into why. So I needed that like more than I realized. And so now I'm just like, yeah, my brain is like back to neutral now. I'm like, okay, I've reset. So thank you for that. Just brilliant.
Not at all.
Okay.
Thank you for your time, if anything else. We appreciate it. And I think, if we're completely honest, Tim, Sophie and I are all of the age that you were sort of the face, the voice, the sort of, such a part of our childhood. And so, but I only met you 10 minutes ago, but I feel like we're old friends. And I think that must happen to you a lot, does it? Like people think they know you because...
I'm always very, very humbled by that. Look, they were really, really good, simpler times, I like to think. Like, you know, and I never took that for granted that, you know, that we were in people's living rooms and that's how we all watch television. Like you turn on the television and possibly a mighty 14-inch television in your living room and there we were every day. And that's a very intimate relationship to have consistently. And I always say to people, when I'm teaching them how to speak and present nowadays, it's like you need to know who your audience is. So I would never talk to, hi, everyone, how's everyone? I always made it really quite clear my objective was just to talk to like one child and like think, okay, who is that child today? Who's that one child that went to school? And I still get emotional. Honestly, I'm that attached. And I think, who's that one child who came home from school today? There's no mum or dad to let them in. Maybe there's no mum or dad. You know, maybe life's a bit shit, excuse my French. But I tell you what there is, there's Jace and he's there and I'm going to be there and I'm going to be that one person who says, you've got what it takes, buddy. Let me tell you, honest to God. And it's just, it's the most humbling thing when someone comes up to me sometimes and goes, hi, Jason Gunn, I just want to say, look, my childhood was pretty average, mate, but just want to say thanks for being there. You think, like if you never did anything with your life again, like, what does success look like to me? That's just, I'm just so humbled, but also just so honoured to be a small part of someone's life like that. It's just, yeah.
Oh, that would be the, that's literally made me well up. Just because there'll be more of that
of that from me coming, don't you worry.
That is, I've never thought about it like that, but that's exactly what that was, wasn't it? It was that consistent comfort of having somebody there each day.
Oh, and so, so many people, you're lovely, and I get it, because I say, I can take myself right back there. And sadly, it's possibly what's lacking more than ever, though it's not just children requiring that now. A lot of adults just need to be told you've got what it takes and it's going to be okay. So I think that's we've lost a lot of that in all the screens that we have now and all the media options. We've lost that one mate in the afternoons to say, hey, listen, just put everything aside. I remember it was Monday on the Son of a Gun show. And I remember it was a Monday, start of the week. And I looked down the camera. I said, hey, Thingy, listen, wait a minute. And I looked down the camera and I said, I don't know what you've done with your hair, but that is the best it has ever looked. And on the Friday, we got like 3,500 letters. And, you know, they all said the same thing. Jason Gunn, I don't know how you knew that I had a haircut, but that is amazing. And it was just that thing we all want to think.
Yeah.
That we're only talking to that one person.
Yeah.
So the day we start talking to everyone, I say you're kind of talking to no one.
Yeah.
So
Elizabeth will know this. I've heard you say this before, and I shared that with Elizabeth. Exactly what you've just said there, which is you were talking about how this little kid at home thought that, you know, how did you know it had a haircut?
Yeah.
And it made me think, like, as well, like, what did you, were your kids young enough to see you through any of those early?
My kids came into play. I'm going to think, so a bit of Bumble, when I was the voice of Bumble.
Yeah.
And it was great because, I was just saying before we started recording that when Faith was little and she would wriggle on the nappy table, I could look at her and go, hello to you. And she would look at me as if to say, wow, the bee is in my dad. And I could get her still to change the nappy. So that was good. But I think it was more like the Dancing with the Stars days that they could come on trips and they could come up to Wellington and come to the big studios, and they never know it, but they're your biggest grounding. Mm-hmm. They're like my self-doubt is just through the roof. Like if I'm doing a speech or a presentation, let alone a TV show, I mean, I get so nervous and I get so filled with self-doubt. And then I would always either ring my kids or if I could see them even better, because if I could do that, it was always like, I've already won, right?
Mm.
This show will not define me.
Yeah.
It could go very badly, but I still get to go home to those four kids. So like, just enjoy it.
We're going to get into a bit of this actually. Like for me, where I'd love to start here is like, because the reality, like what we've seen is you're probably 18 years old and when you sort of first jumped into the public eye, and you've been in the public life for such a long period of time.
Yeah.
Like what, I guess, do we need to know about before the Jace prior to 18 to know what brought you into that sort of, into that 18-year-old on the screen?
I didn't really like school. It wasn't for me. I was that square peg round hole or whichever way it was. My brother Andrew, most beautiful man in the world, very, very smart, went right through school, got to boys' high, went straight through. Boys' high, I thought, here comes Andrew Gunn's brother, get ready. And they were not ready. And my attention was just easily lost. And I'm not going to lie, a lot of my teachers, I think in hindsight, I can look back now and go, I'm not sure if that was teaching. I think you were writing the word on the board and then I was supposed to write it into my book, and that's not how my brain works. So then they'd just say go outside, and then I think in the end towards the last couple of years I didn't even come inside. So it was just like it wasn't for me. So confidence in terms of how smart I think I am still trips me up some days, but I just lean into that vulnerability. Mm. And I guess that has been a great tool for me, because I certainly never think I'm smarter than anybody else. So I'm able to stand beside people and go, in fact, you used that term when we talked the other day, actually, I love that. I can stand beside people and actually go, hey, I get it. If you don't get that, I get that. So I think I struggled a bit with school. That's where I got into drama though, and I learned improvisation, and I think improvisation is like the biggest thing you could ever teach your kid, because life is improvisation, right? It's like we're all making it up as it goes along.
Yeah.
So if all the things you could teach your kids, the ability to think on their feet was the greatest thing that my mum and dad ever sent me along to drama classes, and I learned improvisation, and that was just like a game changer for me, because I just got a real buzz out of that and got confident and realised, well, discovered, not realised, discovered, I'm actually quite good at this and I can bring people joy from this. Mm. My humour through school was never to, I mean, look at me, look at the size. I was never going to bully anybody, but I loved humour at my own expense that could make people laugh. So I guess I learned to do that. I grew up watching a lot of British television, a lot of comedy, which was all about that too, that was all about comedy at their own expense. So I remember thinking, we don't need to upset or hurt anybody to be funny.
Yeah.
That still upsets when I see people doing that. And then this ad in the paper came along, you know, do you want to be a TV presenter? I thought, actually, yes, I do. Mm. And I had written about 30 letters to TVNZ while I was at Christchurch Boys High School and got some to no response. And then so when this came up, they had to give me a chance, and I did.
It's funny to say. It's funny to think you put sort of intelligence in that sort of box, because I would see comedians or people who can genuinely connect with people as some of the most intelligent people going out.
Because
you know what I mean. Like you've got to be so smart to understand, you know, what they're thinking or what they would find a situation, you know, to be funny, to get humor out of someone and that is a completely different form of intelligence, isn't it?
It's probably what I'm a 55 now. It probably took me to 50 to actually work that out and go, hey, you know, this thing that you're just doing, Jace, like that's not normal to just be able to do that.
Yeah.
So then I started looking back and going, so what are the things that I do to set up to enable me to be able to do that? Could I help other people do that? So it took me 50 years on the planet to work out, okay, so not everyone can just do this. Okay, cool. Okay. Oh, I did not know that.
That's sort of the thing you need to lean into, isn't it? What are you the best at? You know, it doesn't mean best in the world, but just like what is your talent and what do people say comes easily to you? You know, when someone says like, oh, you make that look easy. That's almost the thing that you should lean into the most.
Yeah.
Because followed up by that is because it's not easy for everyone.
Yeah, and that's it. And we're not often aware of that. Like you've just said, you kind of think everyone thinks like that, or everyone must be feeling like this.
But I assume that we can all do this.
It's a rarity. And I think the emotional intelligence obviously is extremely high on you to be able to not just do that, but do it in a way where you're consciously connecting with people that you're not actually often even meeting, but you're understanding the scope and the broadness of, you know, the position that you're in.
I think it's always been my greatest strength and possibly, it's not a weakness, but I need to be wary of that, is that I take on other people's, like, if you said to me, what is one thing you think you're really, really good at? Like, you're awesome at? And I go, I'd have to go and have a long walk, but I think I can read a room really well. There's something I can walk into a room and I can feel, this sounds so wacky, I can't sense pain, but I can sense a room that's ill at ease very well. And I could probably say where it's coming from, and that disturbs me for some reason. I don't like, and I feel the need to fix that. So I don't know what it is, but it's that empathy factor is very high with me.
Yeah.
And if I think, and I don't ever think I'm someone who can always fix it, but if I think I can play a part in it, I just double down. I won't leave until it's fixed. It's like, and I love that. And so television has given me the most amazing ability, because being Jason Gunn gets you into places that you can, like hospitals and schools that you go, just imagine that it gets you into that place.
Yeah.
And so in like those hospitals, I've got to meet all sorts of children who are just like, you know, like really, really sick. And I would say might live to the ripe old age of 10 and you get to be a part of their 10 years.
Mm.
And so I got to do that. Like, just how lucky am I?
Yeah.
I want to ask about, what role did your parents play in your upbringing? Obviously, a vital role. But I mean, like, you know, you were at school, you sort of mentioned that it sort of didn't feel like it was for you. You're sort of coming, not going, sort of interested in drama, you know, like, and as a parent, you know, you sort of think about what your children are doing. You're like, well, if their school's, but it must have taken a really supportive family to sort of be like, you know, like, all right, you seem to be good at this. Like, we trust you. Like, reply to this ad in the paper and we're here. You know, was that?
Honestly, very much. Mum and dad, very different. Like dad, older, Scottish, sort of like, I say older, I don't mean older, he was older than me, but Scottish, but he wasn't Scottish, but the Gunn heritage is Scottish, right? And so he was an accountant, so very smart, very dry. Making him smile or laugh was just like, that just lit up my world, just like, wow. Like, I'm not saying it was a challenge at all, but when I could make dad laugh, that was just like, that is cool. That is like, okay, I've won. This is good. And then mum was just like the ultimate storyteller, just like she could light up any room. And my empathy comes from her. You'd watch mum in a room and she'd find out who was not at ease and, hello, I'm Janice. And so I would watch that and think, God, that's just amazing that you, someone could make someone else feel that way. And her friend group, just unbelievable. So I got to grow up with great role models of that. And then on top of that, they also allowed me to be me. Like, they loved Andrew and I just both equally and were so proud of both of us, but they didn't make Andrew be me or me be Andrew. And I think it's the greatest thing as a parent, isn't it? We've got four kids and they are all on their own journey. And I think you've just got to let them find their way. And that's what mum and dad did for us, which I'm so lucky. Yeah. Well,
there's two really quite distinct skills there though. Eh? Like being highly empathetic is one thing, like an understanding, being able to read the room and feel that something's not quite right. But then being able to take action to connect with that person and actually genuinely be able to connect with them. I think, I know we're going to speak a little bit about this today, but that's, I think, what you seem to do incredibly well is just connect. You can connect as a person. And like being able to connect through a screen is one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and once again, this has been your, this is your life. You know, that's why we all feel like we know you, but being able to connect in person too, like genuinely connect with people, something that we try to do really well here.
Well,
we know we
can,
we need, you know, we want to get better and better at, but yeah, they're two things, aren't they? Being empathetic and then connecting and being able to take action is, they're quite different.
And I say enabling, which is what you're doing here, just like enabling people to like share stories and just, I always feel if you can just, I try and teach people communication is one thing, but connection is everything. Like when we connect, like the world is really easy to fix when we connect. If you look at places in the world and, well, how long have we got where things aren't working at the moment, even in our own country? It's just an absolute lack of connection, isn't it? Like just, I'm not listening to you and you're not listening to me. And it's like, we don't have to agree. And then, you know, sadly at the moment, if you show a bit of kindness, then you're way out left or you're woke. And it's like, and it's, sorry, I'm sorry, is woke a bad thing? When did being kind become a bad thing?
Yeah.
So that upsets me a bit. I've got to stay off social media for that. But yeah, I believe if you can read where someone's at, it's just the next thing is to try and ask, well, how can I help?
Yeah.
Or that sort of thing.
Yeah. And it's that authentic connection, isn't it? And that's exactly what you are, I think it is. It comes from a very genuine place of caring.
Mm. Oh,
I mean, the fact that it's not, you know, your motive literally is just to do exactly what you're trying to do, is connect authentically.
Yeah.
Because it is. I think it's easy to move away or see within your children's lives or even in your own lives where that could just be the most subtle improvement in the way that people, you know,
so
interact.
Yep.
It's just such a simple foundation of humanity that
that's
so
all we want for
lost.
Our kids, isn't it? When you think about it, they might have money, great, but really, if they've got that ability to just connect with other people and just bring out the best in other people, and that's, if you say what I'm most proud of my children, I look at them and I go, I see how they are with people, and I go, oh, that when you ask that person how they were and you stuck around to hear the answer, I go, oh my God. Or, you know, I just, and you know, Louis, our youngest, and has just left home, which is not pleasing me, but anyway, I just see him, how he is with people, and I go, oh my God, like that, you are, we all need a little bit of Louis Gunn. You know, it's like, where is that in the world? Just,
we need more Louis Gunns.
Yeah. By the way, Faith, Grace and Eve, you also love a lot. So you are beautiful. Yeah.
What's your superpower? I mean, we sort of listened to you talk earlier about connection. And I don't want to say is that, because I sort of want to leave it open. But like, you've had a prolific career in entertainment and screen and radio, and now your own business. But what do you think underpins that is sort of your core talent?
Ooh. A great question. I was thinking before, and at the start, you said, oh, look, you know, it's just, you say, lovely to have me here and excited. I mean, I think it's that, which is very kind of you to say, I get very easily starstruck with anybody and anything. Like, so something in me, like occasionally I've been so lucky to meet, you know, sports players and television people and all sorts of people. I am ridiculously starstruck. So there's something in me. It doesn't matter. It's literally, it could be someone who's played for the Crusaders for 2 weeks. I'm like, oh my God. So I saw him on TV on Saturday. Or it could be, so when if you're walking through the airport and an All Black goes, hey Jace, you go, huh? Oh my God. Oh my God. I like to open that up and go, so what is it? I think it's about never, ever, ever thinking you're better than anyone in any way, and that there are amazing things I've gotten to do. There's extraordinary places I've been to, but that doesn't make me amazing or extraordinary. Mm. So my gift in life is I want to be able to share the things I've seen and done and learned and the mistakes I've made. And I think I've got a way of just of being able to do that and connect. And people will often say to me, they'll watch me on Facebook or Instagram, and I'm so grateful. And they'll go, oh, Jace, I just needed a bit of Jace today. And I go, oh, that is just so, so beautiful, because they think I'm just talking to them, which obviously I am, if you're listening. And it's that
thing. And you've got great hair.
Thank you. And you've got great hair. I love what you've done with your hair. And I love that. I think it's that ability to somehow make people feel that I'm really interested in you and I really care for you, because I just see them open up to me and I see them tell me stuff that I go, wow, that's just so awesome. So I think I have an ability, hopefully, to make people feel, you know, my God, you are so important. You're so worth this moment. It's that.
And you do that well because it's genuine.
I can't stand this whole word influencer, because to me it's like, who are you influencing? I don't understand. It's like, you're doing it for the dosh. We're not stupid. It's like, whereas I grew up in a time which is like, I ain't going to sell my soul, because it's like, I've built this friendship with you. So, yeah, I'm genuinely want that friendship. And the hardest day ever for me was on the Son of a Gun Show, on the last Son of a Gun Show, when they said, oh, you're not doing this anymore. You're going to go up and do like grown-ups television. And I was like, okay, I'd rather just stay here. And I had one moment for the final episode of the Son of a Gun Show. And honestly, I get emotional just thinking about it. And I said to the director, I need one little link where I just need to get talk to that kid. And I'm like, and I am emotional thinking about it now.
Oh my God.
I'm like, I just looked down the camera and said, you've got to be fine. Like, I'm so, I'm back in the moment now. I said, you've got to be fine. Like, you don't need me. It's been amazing being here. But it's like, you're going to grow up and do the most unbelievable things. And it's just been amazing to see you grow this much, but just keep being you. I remember that day thinking how much I didn't want to leave that kid. Just that connection was just like, God, just promise me you'll just keep believing in yourself. And just that was a really hard day, as you can see. That was a really hard day for me to sort of let kids that I'd never met, many of them, go into that world, because I just loved being their big brother for them. You know,
well, I think that certainly hit the nail on the head. I mean, you read out my name on the and my mum still got the video.
I love that.
And as soon as Tim said, I'm going to reach out to Jason Gale to see if he comes on the podcast, I'm like, you're talking about being starstruck. Yeah. I was like, well, my mum's still got the video. I haven't even told mum yet.
Hi, mum. But that's funny that you say that, because I think that's what you've done on social media when we were preparing for this. Sorry, I'm an absolute...
No, shush, honestly, I'm the worst of the worst. But that's good.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. Sorry, that's embarrassing.
Put some tissues on the table.
Back at the therapist, Jason.
Do you know what I think it is? In these recent years on social media, I was saying to the boys, I was overseas for a long time, and so I started following you on social media, and it was that you were bringing happiness to such simplicity. It was like, I remember one that stood out the most. It was, and I think in a platform that is often heightened, with sort of all of the extreme versions of anything, whether it's, it's hard to connect with for everybody, and that's where it can be quite damaging for people. You were eating cheese and crackers, you'd got back from somewhere, and it was quite a long video, and I remember just sitting there feeling so comforted that you loved cheese and crackers in your kitchen, that you'd bench as much as I did, and that was a really satisfying, normal, joyful part of a day. But again, it's that genuine connection that people are, that's part of a lot of people's lives. Often, you know, if we're lucky enough to have cheese at $12 a block or something.
Absolutely.
But it is a very comforting, even as an adult, I think. And it was a similar reason, is that you were talking to us in a very normal, neutral way that was relatable and just fell well. But so I was saying to the boys, I feel like I'm like one of your biggest fans on social media, because I just love that. We are friends now. Jess. But yeah, it is. And so I think that's when we were preparing, obviously, all of us saying it's almost like you've captured and you personify all of the good parts of society.
Lovely.
But that's very rare.
It is.
I think when we kind of went through our list of people that we could kind of say fit into that mold, I don't know if we even had any other names in that list. We were kind of segueing off into Bumble and Thingy and all of the things all of the different platforms. But there is so much in society we'd all love to fix, I'm sure, but the fact that you can personify the best bits and then connect it back in is an absolute gift in a very humble way, obviously. Yeah. So
I also did grow up making television around a lot of people who were just extraordinary. Like you mentioned Thingy, that was Alan, and you know, he was amazing, and he taught me so much about television. They were masters of their craft, like the men and women I worked with. Like it's a real art form, but now, you know, we've every young person out there, I sound old now, but they grab a phone and they're, yeah, I'm a content creator. It's like, yeah, that's not the same.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the same. Like, this is an art form. I worked really hard at this. If you have a ball, you're not an All Black.
Yeah. Mm.
It's like, I did stuff to get good at this and I really cared about this. Like, I put my heart and soul into this. And that's a difference. So that upsets me when I see people just selling stuff on online. I go, you don't care.
Yeah.
How do you approach that? Because obviously, with easily said, you know, like you're helping educate people in this space. And like what I've heard today is it has to come from a place of genuine, real authenticity. You have to really care. Hearing the way you've just spoken about like talking to camera, thinking about the child sitting there listening, you know, like and seeing that it brings emotion still now and he can see it's connected with you too, Soph. And like, That there is because it's the genuine care.
Absolutely.
You know? So if you're trying to help someone do that, are you training them on caring or are you training them on how to connect through the camera? You know,
a bit of both. One of my favourite phrases I have is one from, I think it was Theodore Roosevelt, like when America had presidents that could put long senators together, he said a great thing. He said that no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm. And I just love it so much because it's like, I understand you have lots of stuff you'd like to tell me, but what if you just showed me how much it means to you? Getting back to my teachers, if more of them had showed me their passion, I would have gone, I want a slice of this.
Yeah.
But it was just information. So when you just relay information to a camera, there's no reason I should ever, I don't understand. Why should I be interested? Because you're not. And I think that's what I get genuinely excited and passionate about stuff because I want others to as well.
Mm.
So I can't talk in a monotone like this and tell people that they should be really grateful and excited to be here because I don't sound like, but when I talk about how grateful I am for my four beautiful children and my wife and my life and being able to spend a day with you guys like this day, I'm just feel so humbled. It's like, and hopefully people can hear that in my voice. And I think, that's one thing I just invite people to do. Just be vulnerable and share how happy you are or how sad you are. It's like it's that connects us, right?
Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah.
And that seems like the premise of Easily Said's your sort of business. And I was reading up about that and one thing you said in there was quite interesting that you talk a lot away about the ways which we communicate with other people. But then there was a really interesting sentence that followed and you said that you talked about it's just as important with the way we communicate with ourselves.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
Well, I think we don't allow ourselves to be communicators because we've got ourselves put in a box there. Well, I'm not a speaker. Okay. So I'm not a speaker. Mm. And if we get asked to have a moment to have a conversation, we ask ourselves lots of what if questions like, well, what if I forget my words? Well, what if I fall when I come up the stairs? Well, what if they ask me a question I don't know the answer to? It's always negative what ifs, always. It's never like, what if I am just so shit hot when I get up there and speak that this is my new career? Like, what if I'm just going to start traveling the world speaking? What if that happens? Like, what if I love this? What if I leave my job because speaking's my new thing? Like, we never do that. What if I am that good? It's like, so we just, the way we talk to ourselves, we set ourselves up to fail, right?
Why do we talk to ourselves like that?
Well, I think, I can tell you why, because I think it goes back to the school speech competition and that's the day for all of us that hell came to visit. Hell came to visit and you were given a subject.
So true.
You were given a subject that you didn't care about.
Why should plastic bags be compulsory?
Mine was euthanasia. I remember.
Which is exactly, your young brain, exactly what you were passionate about. So you were given like, why should plastic bags be compulsory? And then you were told it has to be 3 minutes long, right? So you're told, right, it's got to be 3 minutes. But you're practicing at home the night before with mum or dad and go, stop the clock, Dad, how long was that? It was 3:40. Oh, for the love of God, Dad, we've got to chop 40 off it. Or it's 2:20. How are we going to come up with 40 seconds more content? So what we're taught at a young age is it's got to be the time. So what's the most important thing about speaking? Getting on time. Mm. But what if your school speech was a minute and it was brilliant and you made me laugh or you made me cry, you connected with me. It's not about that, Jason. That's marks off because the bell had not dinged.
Yeah.
And so we learned so much. And what are the three things we learned at the school speech competition? Well, we learned self-doubt. we learn what it feels like to be judged, and we learn imposter syndrome. Mm. And I work...
And a bit of vulnerability as well, right?
Right, yeah, all that stuff. And the problem now, although it's not a problem for my business, is that I now work with people who are in a company or run multi-million dollar companies who, when they get up to speak, feel 10 years old talking about should plastic bags be compulsory again. And we haven't let it go.
No.
We honestly haven't. And that negative self-talk just sticks with us for life. So we don't speak. We miss out on occasions. We don't make videos, which means we drive away from weddings and birthdays and funerals, and we think to ourselves, I should have said something. Mm. I wish I'd said something. But we're too worried about the self-doubt, the imposter syndrome, the vulnerability, the judgment, and so we don't. And so that's why I want people to speak. Yep, you might sell more stuff in your business, yes, but most importantly, you might connect with people and you might just be the most important person in someone's day. Wouldn't that be success?
That's so cool. That's really cool. What a way to think about it.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, you've had an amazing career in TV, radio. Now you've got your own business. And, you know, as much as there are tribulations, there are trials along everyone's journey as well.
Yes.
You know, and we asked these, you know, obviously with your permission that we sort of spoke about this beforehand, but... you know, one of the more notable challenges that you had that was in the public eye was, of course, breaking your neck.
Well, neck, back, the whole shebang. It was just, that was the wheelie bin.
Yeah.
The wheelie bin fiasco, which was, I mean, just many men have looked at the wheelie bin and thought, I'll go in because the rubbish is too high, which is all I did. So I went in. But as any gymnast will tell you, the secret to a good score is all in the dismount. And I said to Louis, now this is where Louis and I will... We beg to differ. Louis, hold the bin. He says he did hold the bin. Son, I know you're listening now. Listen, let's not argue, buddy. Let's not argue. He is the ultimate wingman. But no, I think I got it wrong. And I think I alarmed him maybe at how I jumped out of the bin. I just know that the bin, him, everything disappeared. And I just then, bang, was just lying on the ground. And I was like, oh God. And I just couldn't feel anything. I just thought, here we go. And there's your boy there, and he's going, you're right, Dad. I'm going, yeah, I'm good. And I'm thinking, no, this is not good. And so, yeah, that was a really, actually really scary day because I thought, oh, is this like how you break your back and don't walk again? I just remember the beautiful ambulance driver turning up and looking at me and asking, sending Louis away and saying, can you feel anything? And I went, no. And she went, it's okay. There could be lots of things. I remember thinking, God, I love you.
Yeah.
What a woman to know. I'm just going to send that wee boy away and ask a question and then reassure you it could be anything. It's probably just this, but just I just need to know that. Like, didn't ask, can you feel anything?
Yeah.
In front of your son. I thought, okay, well, I love you. So, and of course, I always remember thinking, so this breaking the back is going to be my big health scare. That's going to be it.
Mm.
Neck minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Like is it even a year later? I'm at the gym, which what can we learn from this people? I don't know. Gyms kill people. I just had this sensation of multiple things going wrong. I'd had a little thing the day before, which was like, oh, what is that odd feeling in my chest? I thought, oh, nothing. And at the gym, I just got like multiple things, tightness, everything going on. Like, oh, no. And because I have, thankfully, a very low pain threshold, I went to the personal trainer and said, this is not, I don't feel good. And he was like, no, you're all good. You've just overcooked it. You've overcooked it. So he sent me to get he got a protein shake for me. Now, in hindsight, I am showing 9 of the 10 signs of a major heart attack, just for his future reference. And so I get the protein shake and I drink it and I sort of throw up a bit of that. So I'm now showing 10 of the 10 signs of a heart attack. I end up sort of driving myself back to my office and my wife Janine is there and she goes, honey, you look terrible. And not the first time she said that. And she said, get to the doctor. So I went, I got driven then to the doctor. And I always remember my doctor is also a very good friend and neighbor of ours. And so he said, you're okay, I think you're okay. We did the ECG and I always remember him coming around the corner and looking at me. And I remember looking at him going, now this is an odd look. And then he struggled with that moment. I'm not, it looked like, because he had to balance that act of being my friend. GP, my mate and my neighbor. And he went, you're going to call Janine and I'm going to call the ambulance. And I was like, oh, okay. And that was the first sign that, oh, something's going on. And then it was, excuse me, on the way there, the ambulance person said, you are aware that you have had, are having or about to have a major cardiac moment. And I was like, no, I think they were trying to keep that from me. But that's okay. I want to thank you for giving me the heads up. And so that then became quite obviously the scariest day in my life.
Oh, my gosh. Just, what was the outcome of that?
So you got raced into surgery. They said, no, you've got like, they basically, and please, I'm no expert, but they measure the number of enzymes that have been released. And mine was like over 50,000. So that's getting into major heart attack scenario. And so he then said, the doctor said, I just need you to be quiet for 60 seconds, Jason, possibly the hardest thing for me. And then, I remember thinking in that moment though, you know, I always say to people, it's interesting when you're aware, oh, shit is going down here, and you go, now, hang on. And all you think, it's what you don't think about, because I thought about Eve and Grace and Faith and Louis and, yes, obviously Janine, and that's it. And it's in that moment where you just go, well, turns out there's actually not much more important to me. And then you spread it out. I think my brother Andy and his family and my mom, and you just, it's such a small thing that this a gift that this moment gives you. And then they say, okay, it's okay. Yep, major blockage. We're going to have to put a stent in immediately. So they put a stent in. And then, you come out of it. You're always affected mentally for that day though. Mm. Like, if ever you get a little heartburn or a chest something, you're always like, oh, what about that?
Well, you were what, 46?
Yeah, 47. So, 46, 47, yeah.
And obviously you would have thought you were fit and healthy and like something like this would have
totally,
been.
Totally, right.
And I mean, I'm sure there are a whole raft of emotions that you went through there.
But, I think disbelief and fear. Do you know what it was? And thank you for bringing this up. It's because I think in that moment you thought to yourself, hey, you're a good person, right? You're a kind person. Mm. Like nothing bad's going to happen to me. And then you go, and then again, Jace, maybe there's another script where today it does.
Yeah. Mm.
And you go, you're not going to get to those four weddings that are your children. You're not. And there's nothing you can do about it. It's just life. It's just, I'd lost my dad quite a few years earlier to a heart attack. So you then start going, that's then doubling down on the why this could happen. Mm. And you go, okay, so it turns out. But then I remember Gilbert Anoka. I met up with him, you know, amazing psychologist. And he said a great thing. He said, it's not till you get a second crack at life that you realize you've only got one.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, oh, Gilbert, that's quite deep. I'm going to have to think about that.
Yeah.
But it is. So that day's presented me with many things. It still frightens me. And then I had an event on a plane soon after that Louis got to witness. And I hate that day. I was on a plane 6 months later and I had a chest infection and I didn't know I had it, but it's post-heart attack and I'm on the plane coming back and I think, oh my God, could this be that again? So I take some spray, which they give you, and I don't think I got enough, so I took a second bit. And I remember thinking, I'm on a plane, it's okay, and Louis and Janina are in front of me and I must have, I don't say overdosed, but I literally had the chest infection in the plane, took the spray, and I remember just passing out.
Mm.
And I remember coming to and I can see Louis and he's not that old and he's like, dad, and he's just in such a panic. And I'm like, oh God, I'm more worried as a dad that, why am I putting, but I just keep passing out again. And this lovely lady was talking to him and reassuring him. And then, I remember the pilot saying, are there any doctors on board? And no, but a woman sat beside me and said, don't worry, I am a vet. And so she said, I'm used to patients biting me, so as long as you don't, I'll be fine. And we got through that day. So that was in some respects scarier because Louis and Janine got to witness right up front what it would be as if I'd had a heart attack.
And you got to witness them witnessing.
I got to witness them, which is always a moment for me.
Yeah.
But so those days there are game changers, aren't they, where you suddenly go, oh, what's important, which is the reason I left radio, because I was in radio at the time. And, that didn't really – I loved radio to start with, But towards the end, it just did not align with my values at all. Like it just, oh no, I've not done everything I've done. I'm not going down with this Titanic. Like this is no, it just did not align. And no surprise, no shit Sherlock, it was Louis Gunn who said to me one day, I was had my radio contract, I think I came down the stairs and he said, "What's that, Dad?" And I was just like, that's the radio contract there. And he pretty much just ripped it up and said, "Yeah, well, you know, we had a discussion." He said, "Well, that's," his exact words were, "that is not what success looks like, Dad." And I was like, wow, when the child becomes the parent.
How old was he there?
Maybe 16, maybe 16, 17. Always been a wise old soul, Louis. Like just, you know, just like, he's been here before, eh? He's just like, you think there's something, yeah.
I actually reached out to Louis prior to this podcast. I had a good conversation with him. I wanted to ask him a few things.
Yeah.
And actually, I'll just bring something up real quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I asked him, I said, you know, what traits of your dad would you most like? What would you most want to inherit? Was sort of what it was about. And what he said was, I think more than anything, it would be his heart. Huh. I know it's a big part of his work that he tries to instill in others, but the heart and generosity he has for people on a daily basis is hard to match. Both him and Mum give all of themselves to whatever, whoever they speak to. Being able to park what's going on in their own world and give all of themselves into what is in front of them is inspiring, even if he often neglects his own health and happiness.
Yeah, see, as I say, wise old soul, right? You think, yeah. And I always tell people, because I stopped radio, he made the first 15 at college and I was able to go and watch him play rugby. I didn't miss hardly any games. And I remember him coming up to me just before the game started and he ran across to the sideline and he'd often do it and he'd give me a hug and he'd say, "Hey, Dad, this is what success looks like." And it was just like, okay, there it is, right there, just okay. So he has been such a good... He's been my measuring stick on lots of things. Like he knows when to call. Because sure, you have a heart attack and people go, "Oh, you have a big thing, so I guess you've never got wound up or stressed ever since." Yeah, look, about that, I'm much better at measuring the signals. Like I can go, "Oh, I'm feeling overwhelmed," or "this person," or "it's been 2 days in a row now where I felt quite angry about something." So I've got this measuring stick that kicks in there and goes, "We're going to go and have a float now. we're going to go and just put a little handbrake on that now." But
Did anything, as far as, you know, you had those scares and it's sort of, you know, you talked about we get two lives and and the second one starts when you realize you only get one, you know, those were sort of your, you know, pivotal moments. What changed, or did anything change in your life after that, with the way you, you know, when you realized that you're mortal, when you realized that, you know, did you start doing anything differently after that at all?
So I think this ability to measure things, take a look at myself, maybe a self-check-in. I wish I could say that I changed and I massively, and sometimes I'm disappointed in myself that I haven't, that I still let things affect me. It's the empathy thing. Things still wind me up too much. I get too affected by things and I'm like, ooh, like, you know, if people are online and they're talking, I'm like, "Oh, I've just got to jump in there and say." So yeah, and I'm still not good at the self-love enough. I still am too much the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. Like, I had the most beautiful float today, thank you, just unbelievable. And I always say to myself, so why would you not do that before you need it? But I think we're all guilty of that.
Absolutely.
Right?
I'm going to bring Louis back in here.
Yeah, please.
Because he's on the point again. He's very, very wise, clearly. And I love him. I've met him a few times now. I really, really, really love being around him.
He just adores you, mate. So.
We asked him what most people want to know about you, I guess. What do people not know about you that you know, you know? Yeah. And the thing he talked about, which is just, once again, just so important, that's why I want to bring it up. But he said, "Dad seems so confident and he's so good at speaking and sharing because he's done it all his life, but he's just like everyone else. He still gets nervous. He feels a huge amount of responsibility. He's hard on himself and he always feels like he can do better." Like, even just you talking about, you know, you wish you were better at looking after yourself, you talking about being the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff.
Yeah.
You know, you've clearly made changes in your life that supported yourself. Yes, but all absolutely. You're seeing to be seeing is the areas that you could be doing things a little bit better. Mm. And I just hope that you get to see all the yes. good that you do, and you yeah. realize that, because I think you seem like the type of person who, well, you're clearly doing a lot for others. Yeah. I hope you realize.
Well, I'm lucky
you're
with my. You're lovely, and that means honestly. And hearing that is like, I mean, who doesn't want to hear that from one of their children? But I guess that's, if you said what's changed, I think I listen to my kids more. Like mm-hmm. I see, I'm even closer with them now, and you know, I listen to them and learn from them more than I ever did. Like I hear that and I go, okay. Because at the end of the day, touch wood, when it is your time not to be here, you know, because let's be honest, I mean, it's lovely to hear those words, because often people never get to hear those words, do they? We don't get to hear it until people gather at an event that maybe possibly you're not at.
Yeah.
So I always think about what do I want my kids to say about me when I'm not here. Many moons from now, and touch wood. And I guess that's actually a driving force for me, is that I want them, I just want them to know how happy I was, and that I don't want you to wish for things that I didn't see or do. I just want you to know, my God, I feel like I won the lottery with you guys. It's like I've already won.
It's funny that like the lowest of lows makes us think of those times, our kids.
Yeah.
But also the highest.
Yes.
You know, like it's when people, you know, if we talk with Cody Taylor in here and, you know, talk about winning a World Cup, you know, all he's thinking about is his kids. You know, it's like it's the highest, the most incredible achievements that you get to. But then it's also the things at the absolute bottom. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that come to mind. And so when we talk about what we want to leave this world with, it makes complete sense that it's, you know, the way that our kids are feeling, or, you know, the way that they're left in the world.
All of that resonates so much with me, because I take nothing more seriously and feel more grateful to get a chance to do as parenting. So
so lovely.
Everything you're saying, I'm just like, I feel exactly the same way. Yeah. But the big one for me, even listening to how Louis speaks, and I'm sure the girls as well, is that your kids can't speak like that unless you've given them the opportunity to know you.
Oh, that's,
and I think
a lot of
parents, we try and role model things in a way that we kind of keep ourselves emotionally or, you know, slightly removed from our kids, and it doesn't give the kids an actual chance to observe and see you making decisions and mistakes and showing feelings that they wouldn't, you know, think, oh, that might not be appropriate. So when your kids truly get to connect with you, they can make observations and statements like that. So I think it is such a compliment. True.
It is a huge compliment. And also I love that he's seen my vulnerability.
Mm.
I love that he sees that Dad just doesn't do this. He has to go away. And look, if I had a doll, if I took you through Louis's threads on his text, it's unbelievable. And 99% of them are just like, we call each other the ultimate wingman, but they're all about, he will text me, I'll be on the way to something, and I'll get one text, which I used to get from my mum, but he's always texted me as well, and he'll go, Dad, and it'll always be, never underestimate the difference that you're about to make to these people. Mm. It's like, he knows that A, I need to hear that, and B, he's someone who has this gift of just putting that in front of you and reminding you that you're not just going to do a speech, Dad. You know, these people, how lucky are they? Oh, Dad, they're so lucky to have you today. And Dad, there'll be one person in that audience who just needs that. And I go, oh my God, that's just, I love that about him so much.
I feel like we all need a Louis.
Seriously.
But can he text me as well?
Yeah. There's a job for him there, right?
Yeah, there is. But it is. It's a sign of the way that he's been shown, isn't it?
Yes. Like
it is an innate, it's not so much an innate thing. It's something that has been fostered. And obviously, because I stalk you on social media constantly,
yes.
watching you go through the loss of your mum, I felt the same way. I was like, you know, how lucky are you and her that you've had that relationship, you know, to feel that loss.
And again, there was Louis the whole time, just like with the notes on the window screen of the car, and the notes in the bathroom by the toothbrush. I've still got them. And the girls as well, actually, just in the way that they could just, they just would text and just be there. Because like that, that has affected me than my heart attack. Obviously currently as I sit here today, because we are literally 4 days from the anniversary, I'd like a better term, of her passing. And it's like, to me, mum is just away on the world's longest probus trip and her phone is out of range. I still can't fathom that this, I can't believe that a light that shone so bright has been turned off forever. It just doesn't make any sense. It's like, and she was like, she would ring me. I'd be coming here and she'd go, oh, Mo, well, that's, well, when's it going to be on? And I go, well, I'll show you where you can find it, Mum. It's a podcast. Oh, yes, well, I'll listen to that and I'll tell the ladies at Probus. Like the most proudest parent. Mm. If I was on the project or doing a TV show, she'd ring to say, wish, Jason, you were all, you were good last night. You should be on more, darling. You know, so she was that. So that has been quite the, yeah, that's been quite the screw up for me. But it's okay that it is, because I'd hate that I tucked that away somewhere and didn't deal with it, you know. Yeah, and every day this last year, I was just saying to someone before, every day I go, I wonder what Mum was doing this, where we were with Mum this time last year. Mm. And you just journey through it. And now I'm into that last week and I'm like, oh, here we go. It's like, and I, because you didn't know it was the last week, right? And you just went, right. I have this story about my mum and it just sums up Mum to a T, right? So, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, Mum, but so we never talked about the cancer, that word, because, you know, there's too many other people with problems out there, Jason, she would say. And she rang me one day and she said, now, darling, the nurse came in last night and she wanted to talk about, you know, the end. And I was like, oh, God, okay, here comes the conversation that no one ever wants to have. Okay, cool, that's okay. Mum, can I FaceTime you? So I FaceTimed Mum, and of course she's got the phone up to her ear. So I said, bring it around to the front, Mother, so I can see your face. And I said, so what happened? Well, she said, yes, the nurse came in and she wanted to talk about the end. And I said, and so did that happen? And she went, yes, darling, yep, the nurse came in, yep. And did she talk about the end? Yes, she did. And I was like, okay, here it comes. So I went, so, well, what did she say, Mum? And I sort of sat down and was like, whew. And Mum went, well, to be honest, darling, I wasn't really listening because the cricket was on. And I was like, and yeah. That's my mum. Yeah. A, the biggest sports fan of all time, and B, I don't know, do we need to talk about that?
Yeah.
And it's interesting, since that day, I've actually had some coaching sessions through my business with a lot of the team at Cricket New South Wales and a few of the Crusader boys and a lot of people in sports, and I remind them, tell me what you do. P.S. The answer is, I play rugby, no, or cricket, no. You provide people like an 87-year-old woman with 3 days to live, you provide her with a massive escapism. Mm. Like in my mum's life, watching that game of cricket, life could not be better. Like, oh my God, go the Black Caps. It's she's not about to die of cancer. She's the healthiest woman on the planet. She's got the Black Caps, right? Mm. And so that story I just love because it reminds us all that we're actually doing a whole lot more than we think,
right? Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, it's such a, I'm even listening to you speak about your mum, I apologise for being so emotional today. I don't know what's going on there. But the big one is when you speak about her, she sounds very much like a lot of her is still obviously lives on within you. And then same with the kids, I'm sure all of your kids are carrying parts of you. But what kinds of, when you think about how you would summarise your mum and the things that you think were, you know, strong values that she held.
Yes.
The way I'm getting to hear is our parents build such a big part of that internal voice. And so we end up valuing things that they value a lot. And so obviously she cared about people so much.
Yes.
Probably why you do and why your kids do.
Definitely.
But she also cared about you so much. And I think, it is kind of like that, you know, what parts of the parts that your mum used to look after of you, are you actively looking absolutely. After those yourself still?
I mean, it's my words with Mum are always unconditional love. It's like it didn't matter where you were, what you'd done, you know. She was just absolutely, the whole time she was just there. And biggest fan, like just, Louis spoke, oh God, spoke at her funeral and all the kids spoke and they just spoke so, I just couldn't believe they all got up and spoke. But he resonated with the thing, God, our daughters are going to listen to this and go, I mean, girls, you don't live at home anymore. He does. Fact. No, but he just said something at the funeral, which was about, like, you were my armor. And I remember thinking, gosh, that's exactly what she felt like to me. Like, you know, I could do, like, no wrong with that woman because it was, everything was just, you know, we didn't, that generation where you didn't talk about if you were feeling a bit blah, you didn't talk about, you know, but she'd know if you were and she'd find a way to get you to talk about it and just remind you of like, but isn't it good that we're doing this? And Yeah.
Does it, like, this is something, I remember you said this something to me a long time ago, Soph, but you talked about like when people that are really sort of important in your life sort of pass on, that so much of them still lives within you. Like, and the fact that you could almost, like, the goal, I think the way you explained it was like the goal that you have with your kids is that they could almost have a conversation with you without you being there.
Yeah.
And
that's a great way,
you know, it's like, it's, you know, if I think about Shyla now, my oldest daughter, if she was to say, ask me something without me being there now, she would probably know what I'm going to say because I've had so much, we've got such a, you know, connection together. And you've said a few things today that, you know, you said, you know, before you coming in here, you could call your mum and she'd be like, oh, when's that coming out? It's almost like you know her so well. You've got such a connection in there that even though she's not there, she's always there. Does that, what the question I'm trying to get to here in a terrible way is,
Is
that better or does it make it harder or is it both?
It depends on the day. Like slide 16 in my presentation of deck of 67 slides is a picture of me and mum.
Yeah.
And we talk about, I talk about, one of the things I teach at Easily Said is I have this HEART acronym and I say it's the secret to connecting people. And the H is for heart, the E is for empathy, the A for authenticity, the R for reassurance, and the T for telling stories. And if you can take those five things and master those, you'll always connect. I get to E with empathy and I just tell a story about mum and I can see the next slide coming up and it's a picture of me and mum. And some days I'm like, this is going to be tough. Mm. And other days I'm like, I'm cool with this. But yeah, I'm able to just go click, click, and it comes up and everyone goes, oh, and they still don't know that she's not here. And I have to say, mum passed away actually last March and you can see the whole room just changes. And I've just got to literally just take a moment some days and go, yeah, you've got this. Or I can hear her saying, move on, darling, move on now. Yeah. And what I love about my job the most is I get to tell lots of stories, right? And what I love about my job is when I'm halfway through a story, sometimes I don't know where she starts, where she ends and I start.
Yeah.
I can't tell if it's her telling the story or me. And it's the most I feel connected. I'll be up there and I'll see people smiling and nodding and I go, I don't know if you're looking at me and my mum. And I just love that. Yeah. So that's that closeness, I think.
Yeah.
And sadly, it's like anything, it's not till it's not there that you realise, wow, that's not normal, eh? That's, that's pretty special.
Yeah.
It's definitely where things like health scares do, as awful as they are, and we all want to avoid them as much as possible, they do give you that, you know, those moments then to kind of think, wow, let's make sure we've captured all of this. And that was something that interests me as well with the change of, you know, interests, resourcing or where you're working or where you're, was that changed off the back of obviously a lack of, not a lack of enjoyment, but a lack of not aligning with your values? Yeah. Did you ever struggle, do you think, with making the call to change, like apart from Louis ripping up the contract, did you ever feel obligated or torn between, you know, following your head or your heart type situation, or has it always been quite clear?
No, I think, well, I also, for two reasons, I think social media is still a great place to have conversations with people, right? In fact, some would say it's an even better place to have conversations with people, right? Real conversations, if you can just swim through the sea of things you don't want to come across. No, because I think I knew, like radio, just as I say, it just wasn't right for me. And I just, my biggest thing, which I wonder if I'll master ever, is that I am a perfectionist and it's a bit of my undoing sometimes. So I procrastinate because something isn't good enough, so I won't do it. And sometimes that perfectionism can really wind me up because I need something to be really, really good and it's not good. So I guess I'm learning to just go, this is fine, this is good, let's keep this real, let's be authentic. And for me, the time on radio, it was a million miles from perfection. So that was certainly a no-brainer for me. But yeah, no, there's nothing about those decisions that I look back and go, no, that was the wrong thing to do. I honestly think with Easily Said now and the differences I get to make in terms of helping people find their story and craft their story. And like what I really try and do is I go to a business and it could be a small business or it could be a bigger business like Air New Zealand. I've had the absolute pleasure of working with recently. And I want to talk to them about how they talk to each other just as much as how they talk to, you know, the public out there. And like, that's a classic example of a business that's just getting hammered by the public at the moment. Like, it's cruel what people are saying to, you know, to people on the counters at Air New Zealand. And it's like, they're just to me, I see a whole lot of people who need to be reminded of just how extraordinary they are and the difference that they make. And I just see that in business wherever I go. Have we got the tools to tell our people how extraordinary they are? Because we just take it for granted, eh?
Yeah.
Like you could say, I've just run a podcast, or I've just got the studio where people just come to look after themselves. And you go, no, you guys actually are changing lives, right? Like, but it just becomes your norm. And it's like, who's listening to this? Who is listening to this today? Because I always say somewhere, someone needs to hear something you've got to say. So somewhere, someone is listening to this, hello, and they are, you are, feeling like I needed to hear something in this today. If that, if we can make it happen with this today, that's success, isn't it? That's job. It's not about numbers and clicks where do we get on the podcast chart. Who cares? It's like, who listened today and who went, I'm going to try that.
So true.
Isn't it?
That's the most meaningful stuff to us, isn't it?
Yes,
the,
of course,
you know, someone
is
messaging and saying exactly that.
And needed this today. Yeah. We've had a few of those messages as well.
And it is. It's often just normal things that we kind of almost skim over because they seem too simplistic. But easily said, what a great name as well.
Because it should be, shouldn't it? I always think with speaking, I mean, things should be easily said, but we just let things get in the way.
Yeah.
And then we don't say words and then we miss opportunities. And that opportunity might be a sale, but equally it might just be the ability to make someone go, I'm not sure if someone's told you, like that kid with the haircut. Has anyone told you just thanks for doing what you're doing, mate? And I just think we need to get... I know I tell too many stories, but there's one on Facebook I'll always remember after my heart attack. I was feeling quite blah because I was taking a lot of tablets and going, why am I taking so many tablets? And I went through a phase of going, I feel like an old man. Like I used to take a Barocca maybe, and that was all. And now I'm taking 5 tablets a day. So I thought, I need to reframe this. I need to go, this is not going to be good. So I started saying from that day onwards, these tablets are my superpower. This is how I'm going to stick around for the next, touch wood, let's not put a number on it, long, long time. And this is how I'll get to be at my kids' weddings. And yeah, this is it. So I reframed it. And I thought, I bet you there's someone online who needs to possibly be reminded of what I needed to be reminded of. So I did a video about, hey, look, what are you going through? Maybe you've got a change in medication or new medication you never took. It's okay, let's just reframe this. And why don't we just go, let's look at these as, aren't we lucky to take these tablets? Anyway, Facebook does what Facebook does. There were lots of likes and stuff, and there was hundreds of lovely comments about this. And there was one young woman who posted on Facebook, and I won't say her name, but she lived in Levin. And I always remember that because she said, hi, Jason Gunn, and of course people share everything. I just want you to know I was having a real shit day today, and I've been having a real shit time of late, and I just thought, just I can't do this anymore, so I'm just out. So she said, oh God, I remember. She said, I took my kids to preschool today and I gave them a really long hug. And they didn't know it, but it was goodbye. And I drove myself to them, and I'm thinking, God, so I've got someone following up this person while I'm reading this. And she says, I got to the park and I just sat in the car and I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm quickly scanning to the bottom. And she goes, anyway, I just want you to know, I just read your post and watched your video. And this is the next sentence I'll never forget. She goes, I just want you to know, I'm just going to stick around a little bit longer. It's like, holy crap. It's like, okay, wow. So I get on, you know, we get busy and we find this person. I know her. I haven't spoken to her in a couple of years, but I know that she still lives in the live-in. She has 2 more children now. She's happily married. I say this story not because, oh, look at Jason Gunn, isn't he? It's not that. It's that we all have the ability to just be that person of any given day. We walk past them. We bump into them. They look a bit sour. We go, bloody angry prick. What's wrong with him? It's like, whereas we could just all decide to be that person in that moment. And it was such a realization of like, this is where I can do some good.
Yeah.
And I think we all need to be that person in a day that just goes, who did I see today coming out of the yoga studio? Who did I see at the supermarket? Did I stick around to ask them how they are? Did I stick around to hear the answer? And if we could all just do that, as wacky woo-woo as it sounds, that day was a real game changer for me, because it was like, you're doing what you're supposed to do, Jace.
Yeah.
but let's do more of it.
The simplicity, just absolutely saving a life.
Right.
And it is the thing that we're the most proud of with our staff, because I think it is. There's so many instances where I've just thought, wow, that similar traits to you, and that just that deep, genuine empathy.
Yes.
That, you know, often there'll be a story that's circulated around the whole staff and we're all just heavily invested in the outcome for someone that none of us would have met if we weren't, you know, part of this. And it is, it's such a lovely part of humanity that does exist. I think we can often feel like it's not out there as much as it should be, but, you know, if it doesn't exist in the listeners' sort of lives right now, create it. Because it is, can be as simple as just asking that extra question, passing on that compliment, being really honest with things that you're going through or things that are hard. I think it breaks down barriers of communication.
It so
that
does.
Just, you know, I'm a notorious overshare, like I'm terrible, so, but I think it is just the, what it does is it makes people think, oh, you know, they might, I might have met them and they might have thought I was XYZ, but you break down the barriers of the box if you're telling them that you've wet your pants while you've gone for a run or, you know, whatever it is.
It's a
lot easier then to meet people on a level that we're all on, whether or not you feel like you are there or not.
Well, it's that thing I think about, like O Studio, I think, so you come up the step, painting a picture, you come up the stairs, don't you? And you get to the counter there and people welcome you so with such a most beautiful smile. They take you through, you're having a flotation tank. And then you sit there and go, okay, or many other things you could do. But for me, it was a flotation today. And you go, what reason have they chosen to come up those stairs? Mm-hmm. Is it because enough is enough? Are they at the end of their tether? Mm-hmm. Like what? Mm-hmm. Like what is that? And they don't need to share that with you, but just know that you are a part of a reason that's going to just turn that around.
Mm.
And like, imagine the good you're going to do. It's like, that's extraordinary. Mm. Like,
yeah, well, we definitely, as I sort of said before, it's easily forgotten because there's so much happening all the time and everyone's got their own lives. But it's, I think one thing I'm really proud of within the team is,
yes.
I mean, it is the most important thing is genuinely connecting with someone. And that's not just connecting with them, it's like caring enough to connect, you know?
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, when, you know, if you've got lots of people coming in, you can drop the ball a little bit every now and then
and
at the same time, it's like, that's what it's all about. You know, we're wanting to create a space, an environment, a service that people can just step away for a little bit and leave feeling a little bit better. We know we're not the be all and end all for everyone. We're just something nice that someone can do for themselves, which we know ripples on outwardly from there too. And I mean, that's you know, we talked about it earlier on, you know, even for ourselves, when we know something like this is good for us, still finding it hard to do it because I don't know why. Is it because we feel like we're being selfish? Is it because we feel like there's more important things to do? But then we also understand that it's not selfish and that we are better people for doing it. It's actually a really hard one to get right.
Well, the word that I used with you, I've used this more since my heart attack, is that I've realized, I think I didn't know it, but I used to get quite overwhelmed, like emotionally. So that's my head is just too busy. It's just too, and I try meditation and it's like, oh, I get, some days I can crack that, but other days, but there's not one day I've taken a float and come out and thought, oh, now, you know, see, I'm not better for that. No, every time I do it, I think it's because it's a mixture of the physical, literally lying in, you know, floating and also just the mental, the brain switching off and just letting your brain go and then let it come back and acknowledge that, okay, and come back here. It's just the most extraordinary thing. And so when I do get overwhelmed, which I still do, to me it's just that it is the be all end all. Mm. So if you haven't tried floating, you need to try it. It's unbelievable.
You said the same thing before, actually. You said to do extraordinary things, you've got to do extraordinary things.
Yes.
And I mean, yeah, maybe explain. What do you mean?
Well,
by
I think
that?
It's taken me a while to realize that, you know, I don't want to be ordinary and I'd like to leave here going, oh, I'd like to think, whether I do or not, I'd like to leave here thinking I did some extraordinary things that they just weren't ordinary or normal. And I made an extraordinary difference. That's what I would like to do. But it's taken me 50 odd years to realize, well, hang on a minute. If you want extraordinary ideas and goodness to come out of something, you need to feed it extraordinary. And I've not done that. So it's like, well, that's how you have a heart attack. but that's it, right? And like, it's like if you wanted to have a, I don't know why I'm putting into this analogy, but if you wanted the best race car in the world, you've got to give it the best fuel and the best maintenance and best everything. But we expect us to set speed records on a track while we're eating shit food and not looking after ourselves and being overwhelmed and then one and not getting enough sleep and all those things that I'm guilty of. So it's that balance. If you want to be extraordinary, you've got to feed yourself extraordinary, don't you?
Yeah. So well said.
By the way, and I just need to clarify this. There is nothing worse than listening to anyone on a podcast who thinks they've got their shit together because I have not. I am as overwhelmed some days as ever. I still stress. I haven't got the balance right, but I'm just getting that awareness a bit better.
Yeah. We're all, I think we're all absolutely at that point. Yes. And that's my always my biggest fear speaking about anything is, it sounds like I've got a very similar brain to you.
Yes.
And so sometimes I'm like, who is this hypocrite speaking about? But it is, I think that's the, but that is the reality for a lot of us. So it is, you know, so no one is a by any means a finished product. I don't
think
either.
We're all just trying to beat ourselves, aren't we?
Absolutely. Yeah.
We may never get to where we want, but as long as we're enjoying the journey as well, that's the other thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've spoken a lot about, you've talked about your connection with your children, with your mum, and it seems like that's been a really important part of your life. Not everyone has that.
No, you I'm know, very aware of that.
And your expertise is connection and communication.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's listening that doesn't have the relationship with the mum. Like you talked about that and, you know, like I would love my kids to talk about me like that. And I don't know if they will. I want them to and I'll do everything I can. But through your, you know, what you've done for a career, connecting and creating relationships with people, if someone's listening and they don't have the relationship they have with someone that they want, what would you recommend?
Well, you know, it's such a great question and I can't say I have the answer, but certainly one thing I would try would be quality time. And it's just being there, isn't it? It's like, you know, finding a common ground.
Mm.
It's like, don't try and fix it quickly. It's like, if you haven't talked to mum in 7 years, you know, one bunch of flowers ain't going to fix it. But you've got to find, and I'm very big on the languages of love. So you need to work out like, what is their language of love? Like, how do they work? What makes them feel valued and unique and special? And maybe that's different to you, but quality time, I think, is always something. And that's, I just think you can never spend enough time with the people you want to spend time with. And it's a very clear message when someone is spending time with you that they obviously value you. So I know since I lost Dad and now since I lost Mum, every Mother's Day I go, don't you dare tell me you live in the same city as your mum and you're going to just ring her up on Mother's Day and wish her Mother's Day. Like, what is wrong with you? It's like, you need to go and see her. And my concern would be is that you might not have the relationship you have with her or him, but do you know what? One day you're not going to have her or him. And I'd hate you to look back at this day and go, could I have done something? Now, not, sometimes there's nothing. There's too much horrible water under the bridge. But all I would just say is go to the future and then look back at today and go, if you could have it again, would you possibly have gotten the car and gone round? And that's the only thing with me, as much as it breaks my heart every day that I can't with my mum, I just think of all the things, the number of sidelines of my children I've sat with and watched her sit beside me and go, go Louis, go Eve, go Faith, go Grace. She's been to all their school productions and I'll go and pick her up and we'll get, and just all the moments. And the number of times I went to drive past her house and thought, nah, stuff it. I don't care if it's late. I'm gonna have a cup of tea with mum. Those, life's made up of little moments. I always say, you know, it's the small talk, which is actually the big talk. You know, we don't need to have life-changing conversations, but if we have enough small conversations, maybe that's enough. Maybe that's enough. So just don't try and do a big thing with this person you're not connecting with. Just make small chat. And maybe to start with, you'll get nothing back. That's okay, you know. Not everyone is good at doing that. I've had some tough crowds over the years. But just know, it'll start with just little steps. And just so it's enough for you at the end of the day when that bad day happens, and I wish it's a million miles for you, that you'll go, but you know what? I gave it a crack, eh? Because if you didn't give it a crack, trust me, it's going to bite you in the ass, I think.
Small things are the big things.
They honestly are. It's all that small talk. It's like wherever you go to get your coffee in the morning, if there's a barista there, that little bit of small talk, it just, you just might be the one person who says, got best coffee, not going to lie. Yeah. Just and no one says that anymore. We don't say that anymore, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
The thing I like what you added there too is really what you were touching on is you can only control what you do. You know, you can't control the other person, the way the other person shows up or the way the other person fosters that relationship as well.
You can hope or wish, but you can't control.
And it doesn't mean you should ever give up. You know, if it's not, it means if it's something that's important to you, but all you're going to look back on is how you showed up, you know? Like, you know, if you can really look yourself in the mirror and be like, look, I did my best, you know?
That's it.
Regardless of where it finishes or what happens, I think that is what's going to matter most.
Well, it's the one. It's the one thing. No matter how much you love, like I will still to the end of my days ask, did I ever tell Mum I loved her enough? And that's me who I'm pretty sure I did. Like, but I will still. It will never be enough. Mm. Like I could. There's still stuff. Mum went very quickly in the end, too quick, and I was like, oh, but I never got to tell you, and you know, and Janine and my kids will go, it doesn't matter, Dad. She knew. I go, you know, I just needed to tell her just like one more time.
That's the perfectionist in you, right?
That's the perfectionist in me. Like, you can never tell people enough. Mm. But then, so the reason I say that is because, so if Jason Gunn, who said it all the time, still feels it was never enough, if you're not saying it once now, trust me, it ain't going to be enough.
Yeah.
I got told when you talked about time before, that you can't force quality time. You have to spend quantity of time, and out of quantity comes quality.
I love that. Mm. Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't. It? You can't go, well, we're going to, this is going to be a very pleasant experience. Yeah, but mother, could you please smile? This is quality. Yeah. And I hope
especially with your kids, I find that summarised how you can't schedule a half an hour with your kids and try and, like, this is going to be something they'll remember forever. It's like you have to play on the tramp every night or chase them or go to the park or whatever it is. And then out of those, that one magic time, you know, the sun sets as you're playing on the tramp and they say something, and then that's the magic, you know, but it only comes from the kids.
It so does. Yeah, absolutely right. And I always say, look, we've been lucky enough as a family. We've travelled overseas and done stuff. They don't talk about those trips. Mm-hmm. They talk about the sunset on the trampoline. Yeah. That's what they honestly talk about. Hey, Dad, remember that time that we did that really stupid thing? We tried camping and we hated it? Yeah, all the time we hated camping. And that was just in our backyard. And that's what they remember, isn't it? And that, again, is, you know, I often take myself to the end and look back and go, you just want to go, oh, boy, did we live, didn't we? Mm. Like, yeah, Daddy got a bit shitty sometimes and he was a bit of a perfectionist, sure. But, and the stories went on a little long, you know, but we smiled and we let them tell them. But you just want that quality time with your kids, eh? Yeah. And that's, you can never tell them that enough.
Yeah. And it's simple when insignificant, it seems seemingly insignificant at the time. I think when you're speaking about this, I think of like, I'm not great in the morning. I love just clinging to the duvet. But it does guarantee that on a weekend, I'll often have all the kids piled in there.
Yeah.
You know, they're chatting and they're sort of pushing each other around. And there's just that really simple, but every time that everyone gets up and finally gets it underway, I just think, oh, that is the good stuff.
Like it's just the good base. Stuff.
It's that simple kind of little windows of time that they all talk about. You know, I've got a few little... It's like
we said before, to get extraordinary things, we need to do extraordinary. Of course, but really as well, there's another thing. To get extraordinary things, you've got to do the ordinary.
Ordinary, yeah.
And just the ordinary over and over again. Yeah. You know? And like the ordinary is where, you know, the extraordinary gets to, come from.
And that keeps us and our kids grounded, right? That really, guys, that really what makes us who we are is actually that we love some of this ordinary family time.
Mm. Yeah.
I remember Ian Grant was this parenting guru who I did a lot of work with years ago, and he told me this great trick, listen up, parents, and it was just this, and I'd done it with all the children at different times because so many of us turn up to pick up the kids in the car and we're on the phone or the phone rings. We got, sorry, mate, just got to take this. So he said, what you do is the next time you're in your car and you're chatting with your child, the phone rings, you go, you pick it up and you watch their face drop and they'll go, oh, here we go. And you start by going, yeah, g'day, mate, how are you? Yep, hey, listen. And you stop them and go, listen, I can't chat right now. I've got a VIP in the car. So it's just not appropriate. I'm going to have to call you back when I get home. And I've done it with all my kids and all of them all said, when I came up, I said, who's the VIP? And I'm like, dude, it's you. Like, come on, are you joking me? And they were like, oh, so Dad, that's pretty cool.
That.
And I just, it's such a silly little thing. But the message that you could give to your kid I don't care if the Prime Minister's on the phone, whoever it is, you know, because I wouldn't so take that good. Call now, just quietly. But I don't care who it is, but you know what? It's like, dude, no one, this is a moment, right, isn't it? And like, I can't believe if someone could have just explained to me better how fast they grow. Mm. Like Lou has just gone flatting and I'm like, okay, I mean, I could pay you money to stay home. but it's that thing about, and you realise, it seemed the other day I was we had four kids in the car to school. Mm. And you thought, oh God, here we go. What would you give to go back to that day? And you think, well, you can't. So that's why it's great to be a granddad, but it just goes so quick. I can't believe, as we've got kids right now, it's in front of our eyes. They're just growing up too quick and it's like, slow down.
It's scary too, isn't it? Because obviously you being a bit of a perfectionist too, you look at time as like a real shivers. If I haven't you know maximized that there with them, it's going and it can, you know, that real perfectionism can and you chuck time on top of that, it can actually be a real source of
absolutely. Like, could I have done better? Or, you know, I'll even go, oh, did I spend time with the, did I say that and whatever? But on the odd time, I do that. I think that, you know, we've got this thing as a family, we'll always spend time together. And then there's always a text straight away afterwards going, oh, Dad, best time ever, mate. Faith, that was extraordinary. Yeah. We keep those comms up. Mm. You know, there's no,
so good.
There's no silence in the comms and the guns.
That wouldn't
surprise anyone, I don't think. No.
We asked Louis one more question. And if it's all right, I would like to read out his answer.
Please, yes.
I think, you know, as a parent, you know, you want your children to speak about you like this. And so this was really important to me because it's really important. I would want my kids to say this about me. And we asked them, what are they most proud of about you? And he said a story we've actually talked about today, but it was the last sentence that really got me. He said a few years ago he was working in radio. He had a great job, it was well paid and he was comfortable, but he wasn't happy. He said it's easy to tell someone else what to do, but harder to actually do it yourself. After a lifetime of making other people happy, he took a massive risk. And at 50 years old, he quit his job and started his own business. He said he was willing to take a risk and it's worked out well. But then he said, I would have been just as proud of him if it had failed.
Wow. Ooh. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. But you see, with him in your life, you can't fail, can you? Mm. And those other kids. Yeah. Just amazing, eh? And this is what happens as we get older. Our kids, as I say, they become the teachers, which is obviously, you think, well, we've obviously done something right, Janine. But yeah, if you said to me what I'm proud of the most about, I mean, look, Louis, I love your son. That's just, he'll be listening. It's unbelievable. The thing I'm the most proud about is our ability to be there for each other. And it's like, what if this fails? Can it fail? I don't know.
Mm.
We've got each other, right? Like, there's been some bad times of late. And I think a lot of families are actually at their best, like, you know, when you're really just trying to get through that.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, I sense that from him. And all of my kids. And I guess I love that so much because I do want my kids to see that, that, you know, that he tried something.
That and courage.
Yeah. Mm. And that you are going to, some days you want that job or want to be in that team and it doesn't work out. But you know what? We don't let that define us, do we? It's like, what can we learn from that and everything? But, I'm gonna take that with me for
a
long, long time. That's... Yeah,
when we put this into sections, we called the last section wisdom, and I'm really glad we did that now because it seems like, you know, you've been through a tremendous life both professionally and personally, and you've developed a lot of wisdom over that time. And one way we sort of like to try and capture that from someone is to ask you, if you got to write on a billboard that the whole world would see, you know, and you could write a sentence or a phrase or a quote, you know, what would Jason Gunn write?
Wow. Okay. That's a great question, isn't it? My initial thought would be something as simple as just be kind.
Mm.
I think it's, and of course these days that's just seen as such a woke thing to say, which I can't stand the word woke. But it's just, I just think we could just fix everything. We honestly could.
Can I change this slightly? Sorry. Would it change if the question was, if you could whisper into the ear of the person?
Oh, that's good.
The entire planet was listening to you right now.
You know, because the way I see you connect, like if you think billboard, everyone sees it out there and it feels like it's sort of speaking to everyone. Whereas the way I see you connect all the time is very like to the person and everything about it. So if, would it change if it was whispering into the ear of an individual, just be kind, or would it be the same?
It might be the same, but I reckon, it's funny to say that, if I could whisper anything, I think, because I'd be talking to myself, I'd be talking to my children. So this message is for me, is as much for my family, as much for anyone driving past. I think what I would say is what I said back in those days. I would say, you've got this. Because some days I'm like, I have not got this. As in, I don't think I've got it. And then I see it in my kids, and then you just see it. And I, when I see in the world, people are like, hang on a minute, it's all right, you've got this. We've got this. It's like maybe it's a you've with a we've underneath it, because I think together that's our power, right?
And it kind of sinks back to that phrase that you talked about on the last day of your show.
Yeah. No, it does. And
you're,
that just,
you're going to be all right.
You're going to be okay. You're stronger than you realize, eh? It's like you might not know it today, but it's
You've
all going to be
this.
Well, you know what? And my mum used to say, and my wife Janine says, God, I've hardly paid her any attention. And she has a beautiful phrase, and it really helped me through everything, a lot of things. She goes, it will all be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end. And I've always loved that. I've thought, just keep going. It's like, there's more to come yet.
There always is, isn't there?
That's the end of this chapter. But you know what? We've got another chapter. And maybe that last chapter was a bit sad, but boy, there could be some laughs coming in the next one. So.
My middle daughter, she loves the book Wonder. That's one of her favourite books of all time. But there's a little quote in there, always be kinder than is necessary. And I love that because it's like, it's being kind is kind of like you've said, it's, you know, if everyone was just more kind, but being kinder than is necessary is just like, that almost gives a little bit of oomph to
double
the action.
Whammy,
a double whammy. And she always, and I feel like she often is, just kinder than is necessary. And it is, it actually is. Self-filling as well, isn't it? Like it's lovely for the other person, but it makes you feel a lot better about just life in general when you are kind. So going out there and trying to be more kind than you think necessary.
It would be wrong for me not to finish with the Jason and Louis story. And there are many of them, but there's two, so I've just got to pick which one I'm going to go with because they're both very, very good. Okay, so I'm going to tell you the one we're going on holiday, Louie and I. We were driving down to Queenstown and we stopped at the local garage and to get a coffee and fill up with petrol. And this woman was making coffee and she was just beside herself. She was like, oh God, frazzled, absolutely frazzled. And just people demanding, not being kind. And I asked for a coffee and she said, sorry, what was that again? And I went, it's okay, just a flat white with just one sugar, that's all. And we got that in the end and we got back in the car and we headed off and Louie and I started talking. I said, gee, that poor woman. I said, just, you know, the way where people were talking at her and then she was frazzled and, I said, I don't know. And we just got onto something else and I said, hey, why don't we ring the garage? Why don't we ring her up? I said, because this is a great coffee. Why don't we ring her up? And he was like, oh my God, that's such a good idea. So Louie Googles the number, puts the call through and I'm like, hey, and then she answered the phone. I can still hear the tone is not great. And I went, hey, it's Jason Gunn here. Oh God, what's wrong? Did you get the wrong coffee? Or what's wrong? What did I get wrong? And I went, no, listen, I just want to say, I know you're busy, but just listen to me. Are you listening? Yes, yes, yes. I said, this is the best coffee I've had in such a long time. And I just want to tell you, seriously, this is the perfect start to my holiday. And there's just this silence. And I'm looking at Louie and he's just smiling at me and I'm smiling back. And this woman just goes, oh, I just so needed to hear that. I went, well, listen, I'll be back tomorrow when I'm next coming through. I'll get another coffee. She went, that'd be good, Jason Gunn. It would be good, Jason Gunn. Thank you so much. I went, no, that's okay. And it's just that thing, isn't it?
So
like,
good.
I, What did I do? Did I give her $1 million? Or did I just tell her she makes friggin' good coffee? And that's all it takes,
right? That's all it takes.
And we're all able to do that. And I always remember that coffee. And I still get the coffee from her and she's great. But that's all it takes, isn't it? And I love what that quote that your daughter loves.
Yeah. It wasn't necessary for you to follow up with a phone call, but that literally is the
ultimate. And people see it as like, well, that's just ridiculous levels of kindness. Brilliant. I go, well, actually, it should become the norm, right?
Yeah.
I would say, who could we call today if we chose to? Who could we call today and be ridiculously kind to? That is my challenge for you listening right now, is I want you to ring someone you wouldn't normally ring and just be ridiculously kind to them. Just say why. And they're going to go, why? You go, why not?
Why not?
There's a lot of baristas that might get a call the same birthday after this.
And they may be angry because they're in the middle of making coffee. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh. Hey, like I said, we all sort of felt like we were connected to you before this conversation through our childhoods. But you're always, you know, they talk about don't meet your heroes, you know, because you're disappointed.
Yes.
And if I can say one thing, it's that you're as nice as you appear to be. If not nicer, you know, it's been an honest, you know, privilege and a pleasure to spend, you know, be able to do this and have the conversation.
Thank you.
I think, you know, there'll be people listening that'll think the same and hopefully taken something, you know, pretty special out of today.
Thank you. Wow.
And we're certainly three of them. So thank you so much for your time. We know you've got a lot sort of pulled at different ends, but.
No. We must always find time for that.
Yeah.
And wherever you are listening, you have got this and you've got what it takes.
What a place to end it. Jason Gunn, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much.
Jason.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the O Studio podcast. If you like this podcast, there are two things you can do to help us out. The first is to click the follow button wherever you are listening. And the second is to jump on social media and give us a follow at O Studio Global. We've just launched these new pages there, so we've got some growing to do. If you could do that for us, that would mean so much. Our purpose at O Studio is to make holistic wellness as accepted, as understood, and as practiced as physical fitness. If you want to join us on this journey, come and visit us at a location near you. Visit ostudio.co.nz for all the details. Own the moment.